One of these things is not like the other.
We're going to compare and contrast the Justice League movies. This is Cinematic Bratastic.
Welcome back to Cinematic Bratastic. I'm Philip.
And I'm Andrew. You can check us out on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and anchor.fm. Like, share, subscribe, comment, throw it against the wall, do whatever.
No, don't throw your device against the wall.
That'd be a bad idea. It. You need the new one anyway, right?
Just if you do, you can't sue us. We're not responsible.
We will not reimburse you. My phone's cracked right now. I can't get a new one.
We are back, and we are going to talk about the differences in the... There's two different versions of the Justice League. If you have been living under a rock, newsflash, there's the theatrical version that came out that... Why are you laughing?
Thinking, if you've been living under a rock, there are houses out here.
You don't have to live in the rock. There is the Justice League theatrical cut that was taken over by Joss Whedon when Zack Snyder had to step away. And we now have the
Zack Snyder's
Justice League, which he was, after several years of the Snyder Cut, released the Snyder Cut campaign, the movement...
By the grace of whatever you want to say, this movie was made.
Yes. A movement from fans has done almost the impossible. They have gotten a director the second chance to realize his version of a movie that unfortunately he wasn't able to due to issues with his family and having to step away from it.
And so, yeah, it presents a unique situation. I almost kind of wonder if this is going to be a subject of like some kind of film class or, you know, I really hope that a documentary comes out about this, because this is a truly unique situation. I don't think it would work again. I mean, it would take a lot for something like this to happen again. I think the pandemic probably played a huge part in this as well. Like if we didn't have this global pandemic going on, I don't think this would have happened. And, you know, it's one of those things that just all the pieces fit this one time.
Well, and it's not to say that something similar like this has never happened before. Like fans have campaigned long and hard and made things happen.
Yes.
This one, I think, is a different situation. But just for example, a TV show called Jericho had one season and was canceled. And fans of the show campaigned enough where they greenlit a second season. Like, they reversed their decision of canceling the show. Joss Whedon got to make a movie out of a TV show that was canceled. You know, his Firefly TV show was canceled early, and there was a movement of fans, and there was enough of it that he was able to make a movie from his canceled TV show.
Well, you are correct on that, but I think what makes this stand out is that those two were something that was ended, and then there was enough of a fan outcry that people like, oh, there actually is interest in this, let's continue. Whereas this, the movie was made and they were done with it, and it did not do well at all. And then so for something that failed, to have them say, yeah, we'll put more money into something that did not help us out financially, and then make a brand new movie with existing footage, I think is, as far as I know, it's the first of its kind.
Right. So, yeah, like I said, I agree that it's a different situation, different circumstances. It's not a, oh, there's enough interest, let's go ahead and continue this. But it just goes to show, if you're a fan of something and you can get enough.
If you can get enough support.
Get enough people to support your movement, who's to say it can't happen?
Yeah. So the fans spoke out, and this movie was made. And so now we've got two very different, yet very similar at the same time movies. They both obviously start off very similar, but then the most of the differences really start to shine as the movie gets toward the end, because in the end there's characters that weren't even in the original in the original movie. So there's that. But we're going to kind of compare, you know, the differences between these, and it's just one of those things where, like, it's a balancing act for me. Not necessarily a balancing act. It's a weird, like, I like it and hate it at the same time. And I'll get into that later. But, like, there are moments when I went back and watched the original after watching the Snyder Cut, because I was like, I need to know what's different. And it was amazing to see moments where I'm like, why in the world did you make this change? And then there were other instances where there were things that were added to this version, to the original, that to change it from Zack Snyder's version, that I thought were really cool. And we can get into that here in a little bit as well. And there are parts of, like, I remember really liking too. So,
well, yeah, I mean, when I first read the news that Zack Snyder was having to step away from the movie and they said Joss Whedon was coming in to take his place, I thought we're in good hands. Having been a Joss Whedon fan, you know, from his early days of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Firefly, Angel, he did the first Avengers movie. You know, the stuff that he does, I'm a fan of. And
he's also pretty big into comics,
yeah,
too. Both sides, right? He's done both DC and Marvel stuff, right? I think.
I don't know. I know he's written comic books for Marvel.
Okay.
He's written some of this in the X-Men universe.
Okay. So he's
a self-proclaimed, like, comic book nerd, or, you know, he loves pop culture.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things where when it was announced, I don't think anybody thought we were going to end up one day with we hate this version and we want, you know. But I think you and I can both say that we still enjoy,
yes,
the theatrical cut.
Yeah.
But I like the Snyder Cut more, because it does flesh out a lot of stuff that obviously the original version did not.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of characters and character moments that didn't happen that do in the Snyder Cut.
With the exception of obvious story points and plot points and things like that, some of the biggest things that when I went back and watched the original theatrical version, the biggest thing that I noticed when, you know, because I wanted to see how Joss Whedon how Joss Whedon changed the movie, with the exception of obvious new scenes, like the scene where Batman's on the roof catching that guy to lure a parademon. You know, that's all brand new stuff that was not shot by Zack Snyder. The biggest thing was I noticed a lot of times a scene's playing out, it's what Zack Snyder shot, and then all of a sudden the next shot is a little bit tighter than it was before on you know, Jason Momoa or Ben Affleck, and the background is, I'm surprised I didn't notice it then, because I feel like I can usually pick out those moments, but it's obviously a green screen or some kind of blue green screen. You know, they just went to a studio, dressed them up like they were, filmed him saying one line and then moved on. And there's a lot of that, at least at the beginning. And, you know, the other thing was, you know, and I showed you just now the scene where Aquaman and Batman are talking in the Icelandic village. He goes into the water and he leaves. In the Snyder version, the Icelandic women sing him off, and all you see is ripples in the water. You don't actually see Aquaman go into the water. And it's kind of a mystery, like, what happened to this guy? In the Whedon version, there's a lot of like awkwardly tight shots of Jason Momoa, and clearly a blurry mountain in the background that's just like a, instead of an actual like optical blur, there's a effect called the Gaussian blur. It's a, you know, when you want to blur something on a video in an editing program, it's called Gaussian blur. And I feel like they just did that to a picture and put it behind him. Yeah. And then he jumps in the water. He jumps in the water and you see the ripples, but you also see like a bubble tube trail leaving the area. And so, you know, there's a lot of weird little differences like that, and it's throughout the movie, and it's just one of those things where, like, I'm really surprised I didn't notice it before, but it stands out so much now.
Well, and the other big difference is the Steppenwolf character is completely different as far as the way he looks. Like, the horns are even in a different position.
Yeah.
You know, in the Whedon version, they're more laid back, I believe. I may have that backwards.
But no, in Whedon's version,
more up.
In the Snyder version, it's part of his head. He has horns that stick back.
Right.
In the Whedon version, it's his helmet.
That's right.
But the horns are
more laid back or something like that, but they're not in the same position.
Like you said, one of them's straight up and the other one's sticking out back.
And then in the Snyder's Justice League, he has like this suit of armor that almost reacts to his movements and his body, where in Joss Whedon's,
he's like wearing a loincloth and a shirt, and he's not really wearing armor, and yeah, it's just kind of
there's changes that obviously,
and his face too, like his face is more human in the Whedon version, whereas in the Snyder version, he looks more alien.
Right. Well, and it's I think we said something before we started recording that how much. It's crazy to think how much work Joss Whedon did to an existing film to change that existing film.
And it's just kind of curious, because even if you go back and watch Batman vs. Superman, one of the deleted scenes, if it's in the extended cut or if it's a deleted scene where a bunch of soldiers come in and apprehend Lex Luthor. And he's in the Genesis chamber that birthed Doomsday, and he's talking to Steppenwolf. And Steppenwolf is holding three mother boxes. And when you look at it, and that one is just like kind of a silhouette. You don't really pay much attention to it. But you can see the design that's in the Snyder version is in Batman vs. Superman. He's got the multi-layered armor, and the horns go back and everything. He had that design
already
from the get-go. Yeah. And for whatever reason, they chose to, and I feel like it was late in the game, you know, when Snyder had to step away, it was pretty late in the game. And at that point they changed
everything. Yeah. From what I've read is they're really on paper shouldn't have been that much left to do.
Yeah.
To finish the movie. And, you know, I wonder, because the movie, the Joss Whedon's version carries his name as director. It does not carry Zack Snyder as like an assistant director, does it?
No, it says it's a Zack Snyder film. It doesn't say Joss Whedon.
Oh, it doesn't?
Mm-mm, no.
I guess I've never noticed that before.
Yeah, that's the other weird thing. It says directed by Zack Snyder. And I think it says, you know, produced by Joss Whedon or something. Like, his name is obviously on there. But it lists it as a Zack Snyder movie.
Hmm.
Which is the other weird thing. It's like, this is really strange.
Well, you would think that with him changing as much, that it might technically have been able to be changed to Joss Whedon's as a director. Because I'm wondering, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those weird things where, like, I know Solo had a big issue because, was it Phil Lord and Chris Miller?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they had filmed 70% of the movie, and then Ron Howard came in and reshot some stuff. And so it was just like a question, well, what is reshot? What's not? How, like, I forget what it is, but if there's a certain percentage of the movie is from one director, that is the director of the film.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's considering that Zack Snyder's version is 4 hours and the Whedon version is 2, you know, it just makes you think, and the fact that they're very different mm-hmm. in their story, it just kind of begs the question, like, how much... But, how much is his and how much... And maybe, you know, I guess it might also apply to the fact that the story is very similar. Mm-hmm. The story, the actual storyline doesn't change much.
Right.
It's just how it's told and how the characters get to that point. Mm-hmm. And I think Zack Snyder had a lot to do with that. So while Joss Whedon may have come in and rewritten... like dialogue and scenes, the story was still kind of the same. So, I mean, this is just off the top of my head, but I think that may also play a part.
Right. But also you pointed out earlier before we were recording on here that obviously there's scenes in the theatrical cut where that same exact scene is in Zack Snyder's example. Going back to Aquaman, as he's walking into the water in the theatrical cut, he's walking backwards while looking back at Bruce Wayne, and he says a line of dialogue. When you see the Zack Snyder version, that same scene is there, but there is no dialogue.
Yeah, the exact same take, too. It's not like a different version.
So Whedon obviously had Jason Momoa record a piece of dialogue. He took an existing scene and added the audio of the dialogue over an existing scene. So, and then you pointed out about Wonder Woman in the Snyder cut. She uses her sword and decapitates Steppenwolf.
Yeah.
In the theatrical cut, that same exact motion of her with her sword jumping up and flipping through the air and slicing something is there, but in the theatrical cut, she's destroying Steppenwolf's axe.
They filmed Gal Gadot jumping up, like running up a wall and jumping off to get some air, and then attacking with her sword. And it's in both movies, but the context of what happens is very different. And even it's very clear that they filmed it with a green screen.
There's a lot of special effects.
Yeah. And obviously. So in that regard, it was just all they had to do was change the background. It's very simple because they already shot it intending for the background to be a special effect. So it wasn't that big of a change, or it wasn't that difficult for them to just superimpose
the special effect
to another scene, another aspect or whatever. And so it's just really interesting that they basically used a lot of his original footage. They just repurposed it. And that kind of goes into part of the parts that I like about it. Like, as I'm watching it, I'm getting, while I'm at the same time saying, why was this change made? This makes absolutely no sense. Like, the differences between Steppenwolf. Like, why make the design change? Like, it makes absolutely no sense why they changed it. And, you know, I can maybe understand changing his armor or something, but it's a complete character redesign. And I feel like, you know, knowing how directors go through like 8 different versions of, you know, like, well, his horns are longer in this one. This one he's wearing this one he's wearing that, you know. One thing I like seeing online sometimes is concept artists will show, you know, this was my version of Captain America for Endgame that never made it, but I really liked it because I liked this aspect. And you see it, and you see a completely different version of the character that a director said, no, I don't like that one, let's go with this one. And that's the one that made it into the movie. So just knowing that process is huge. To the fact that they went through that change makes no sense. Well, but
and if the scene was done and the special effects were done for Gal Gadot decapitating Steppenwolf.
Yeah.
How much money did they have to spend for another special effects artist to go back, change the background, change the scenery, and now she's destroying an axe versus decapitating the character.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it was, you know, because I know that, for example, the flashback scene where they show Darkseid coming to Earth, or in the theatrical version, Steppenwolf, and there's a battle between the Atlanteans, the Themyscirans, and the Kingdom of Men, and a Green Lantern, and the gods all fighting them. And both are the same. Like, they're both scenes are the same, roughly. It's like I just described it. It's all these people fighting the new gods, I guess, is what they're technically called. But in one version, the Green Lantern is stabbed and killed, and then his ring flies off. In the other version, his hand is chopped off, and then he's killed. And then the ring floats a little bit, and Steppenwolf tries to grab, or Darkseid tries to grab it, and then he's hit with an arrow, and it distracts him, and then the ring flies off to find a new Green Lantern. And so, like, there's subtle changes, and I've listened to the guys at Weta. I think they talked about how, you know, they got the project, and they're like, well, they basically had to start over for Zack Snyder. And so I think, this is my opinion, I think that they had, like, a rough idea of, like, the special effects, and obviously, you know, they had filmed, I don't know if Kieran Hines put on a motion capture suit or if they had another actor do that, but they had obviously filmed that because, you know, some of those movements are the same, but I think a lot of the special effects weren't finalized. Mm-hmm. Like even like what specifically happens weren't finalized. So to start, I don't think they had to start from scratch in that regard. Like, they weren't, like, almost done and then they had to start over.
Right. Well, and then I guess one of the blaring differences is the fact that the theatrical cut doesn't include Martian Manhunter.
Yeah.
Doesn't include an appearance of Darkseid. The Flash's backstory in the Snyder Cut includes a glimpse of the Iris West character.
Yeah.
She's not in the theatrical cut. And
Willem Dafoe is,
yeah, he returns.
Completely cut out. And this was kind of interesting that, you know, after, of course, you know, knowing the plot of Aquaman, in that movie, the whole point is he has to go find his mother's trident. And his mother's trident is with his mother deep in the deep parts of the earth. In the Snyder Cut, Willem Dafoe is holding her trident. Says, take your mother's trident and take on this beast. And so it's kind of wondering, like, where did that storyline change going into Aquaman? Like, what if Snyder Cut came out, how would that have influenced the making of the Aquaman movie? Because I think that came right after.
I think it was the next movie in the.
And so it's just kind of curious, like, where did that plot point get changed? Because I know these movies are planned out and start, like, they're work, like, while they were, I'm sure that James Wan was working on Aquaman while they were making Justice League. So,
well, and I believe that, I think Aquaman was the last movie that was made under the influence of,
yeah,
Zack Snyder's vision.
Yeah, and he mentions Steppenwolf in Aquaman.
And so, you know, if the original Snyder's vision of Justice League had that plot point, when Joss Whedon comes in, is he responsible for changing that? Obviously, there's no mention of that plot point whatsoever.
Yeah, he's completely taken out.
So does his decision to not include that make James Wan change Aquaman?
Yeah, it's
like, does he have to go, or yeah, like how did that influence Aquaman, or did they make Aquaman knowing that was being dropped so that they could include whatever they needed. You know, they could include that in their storyline of, okay, well, since that's not actually going to be in the Justice League movie, let's make part of our movie's motivation for the character to be searching for his mother's trident.
Yeah, it begs the question, when did that change?
Which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Exactly. But at the same time, you know, I was trying to say earlier that you know, there's all these changes that make absolutely no sense. But at the same time, you know, there's moments where, like for the Flash, I feel like there's a lot of his moments, whereas he definitely still shines in the Snyder Cut. There were some moments that I really liked in the Whedon version, and that was, you know, when the whole team meets up with Steppenwolf for the first time. They're in that Gotham Harbor tunnel system, whatever.
Oh yeah.
And he looks in and there's this towering guy. He's like, where are the mother boxes? And then, you know, Barry Allen steps back. He's like, oh, okay, full disclosure here, I've never done battle. I just push people and I run away. You know, it's hilarious. It's a hilarious line. And it's like, you know, that's what he does. He could just push somebody and run away. And that's not in the movie at all. But that's a perfect line for the Flash.
For the Barry, yeah.
And you know, so that kind of stuff, you know, and there's a few other moments like that. You know, I think he also talks about, you know, if we revive Superman, is it going to be Superman or is it going to be Pet Cemetery Superman? You know, like what is it? And then when Superman starts to act a little bit different, he's like, oh, Pet Cemetery. And it's hilarious. It's a funny line and it kind of gives some levity to the moment. But, you know, that's not what he says in the Snyder version. And so that was, as I'm watching this, I'm seeing all these moments where I'm like, why did you make these changes? But at the same time, I'm seeing the craft that it took to take a 4-hour movie and cut it down to 2 and to know, okay, I've got this footage. I've got these scenes. Jason Momoa has his back to the camera here. I can insert this line of dialogue there. I can do these quick lines of dialogue off screen for these characters. We can do, you know, 100 pickup shots real quick of blue screen shots of the character saying one line to make this scene have a completely different context. It's almost kind of, you know, there's a whole appreciation there because I'm seeing the great struggle it would take to make that work. And
take something that you are not a part of,
yeah,
from the beginning, that is, what did they say? It was like close to 80 to 85% done before Joss Whedon took over.
Yeah, I think it had mostly been filmed.
And so to take over,
it was like special effects and stuff like that. Yeah.
And, you know, as far as like what Joss Whedon did, I don't know if it's been relayed or if anybody's been interviewed that has said, was that all Joss Whedon? Or was that the studio saying, hey, Joss, come here, help us finish this. While you're at it, can you change it?
Yeah. Well, I think another thing that I think might have also happened is that, you know, I mentioned, I think, while we weren't recording, that Zack Snyder tends to overshoot. And so, you know, it begs the question, like, why is this movie 4 hours long? His other movies have very long versions of them exist. And it kind of makes me wonder if, because there are some scenes where there's a different bit of dialogue here or there that's not in the Snyder version, especially with, you know, Barry Allen visiting his father. There are some scenes where, like, they say one thing or say a different thing. But, you know, when I watch the two versions, I'm not seeing blue screen work. And I feel like it's a huge deal to, I mean, maybe they did just go back. It's like, hey, you guys need to come back. We need to build the set again. If it's not already taken down, refilm it and all that stuff. But it just seems like there were takes that Snyder wasn't going to use. And so he was like, oh, there are these other takes that have lines that would work better for what I'm trying to do. You know, the scene where we just watched both scenes from both movies of Batman and Aquaman talking in the Icelandic village. And in one version, he says, I hear you can talk to fish. And one version, he doesn't. But I honestly feel like Zack Snyder filmed that, but wasn't planning on said, I'm not going to use that. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like, at least that's my opinion. I haven't heard or read anything that says that's what happened, but it seems more likely that there were just different takes that Snyder did shoot that Whedon was like, hey, I can use
that one instead of this one.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's just kind of one of those things where, like, you know, the movie, I think, honestly, like you said, we both like the movie. We both enjoy it. I wonder if there would be this huge backlash, release the Snyder Cut movement, all that stuff. I wonder if it would even exist if it wasn't for the mustache. You know, the movie opens up with that podcast, the two kids doing a podcast, cell phone video of Superman at a house fire or something, and his face looks awful. It's just like, what is wrong with your face? And that's the first thing you see, and you're automatically like,
what's wrong with your lip?
And you know, there are scenes like when he says, do you bleed in the Whedon version? You know, he asks Batman, do you bleed? He doesn't say that in the Snyder version. And so that's one of those scenes where, you know, if I didn't know any better, I would have thought that was filmed without the mustache. But it's a reconstructed face. But it was close up. They probably put all the money into that version. But the other scenes, he's farther away and they didn't either have the time or the money or both to make those ones look better. And so, you know, they could have, I guess, made it not so mustache nasty or whatever. I just made a weird phrase. Mustache nasty. But yeah, if he didn't have that problem, for whatever reason, the two studios between Henry Cavill making Mission Impossible, where he had facial hair, at the same time as doing reshoots for Justice League, if they had let him shave or if they made the agreement that he could shave, I honestly don't think that this movie would have been as bad as it was.
I don't know. It's hard to say because obviously I think the mustache was one of the biggest dominoes in what created the release, the Snyder Cut.
Yeah.
But even without the mustache issue, I think as fans, you know, they somehow find out this type of stuff. But I think they would have found out that Zack Snyder had filmed a lot more footage that didn't make it into...
Yeah.
Now, whether or not there would have been as big of a movement or not, I don't know.
But in that regard, it could have been like, you know, like Batman vs. Superman. There's the theatrical version, and then there's the extended version. Mm-hmm. And so they could have made the director's cut, you know, and then, you know, we still would have had it. But, you know, it just kind of makes you wonder what, you know, would this movie have been? Because I remember thinking, like a lot of people liked that version of Superman. Like they were like, that's the Superman I know. Mm-hmm. That's the Boy Scout. That's the all-American good boy. And they preferred that version over the Snyder version. So it's just one of those things. And I don't know.
The one of the biggest differences, and again, I don't know if this was a scene shot by Joss Whedon. Was it an original Zack Snyder? But obviously with comic book movies, there's points where you want to, you know, there's fan service. You know, obviously we've mentioned it several times, Captain America and Thor's hammer.
Yeah.
That's a moment for the fans. in the theatrical cut of Justice League, Cyborg, who is not a character that I'm, you know, I've never been a big Cyborg fan, but his catchphrase is Booyah.
Yeah.
And I know people that are bigger fans of Cyborg. He says that in the theatrical cut, and they're like, it was like a cool moment for them as fans of the Cyborg character.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't say it in Zack Snyder's.
He doesn't say it
Justice
at all.
League. So again, I don't know, what does that mean? Joss Whedon decided to film that and put that in, or was that a Zack Snyder scene shot that he decided not to put in? Because we know that there's a scene in the trailer for Zack Snyder's Justice League of the Joker where he says, "We live in a world."
Yeah, we live in a society.
Or we live in a society.
Yeah.
And I know that there was some weird backlash. Not huge. I'm not saying that people were rioting or not going to watch the movie. But people were kind of confused as to why it wasn't actually in his movie.
Yeah, and he released an extended version of that scene.
Right.
And that line is in the extended version.
It's just not in I don't want to call it the theatrical cut, but the released...
The Snyder cut. The released version.
Yes.
The Snyder cut. I think, if I remember correctly, I only watched it once, so I can't remember exactly, but I think it implied that the addition of that scene, what was included was a mention of multiple Robins and a male and female Robin. And so, like, whereas... You know, at this point, we've only had one Robin. I think he mentions that there was more than one, but he says something like, "Was it his or hers?" Or I don't know. I forget what. But it's implying that I know that there's a female Robin. I don't know her name, and I only know Dick Grayson. I know that there's 3 to 7 others, but I don't know who they are.
And Drake.
Tim Drake. Yeah, that's fairly recognizable name.
Probably behind Dick Grayson, he's probably the most most famous.
But I do know that there is a female, at least one female Robin. And so they're implying that one of the many Robins that have been killed throughout the years was her. But that was, I guess, putting too much into the movie. I don't know. Yeah. And so they took that out. And so the We Live in a Society line, I guess, didn't fit. I don't know.
Well, I guess we'll just have to wait for home video release to see do we get the extended cut of the Snyder cut.
Yeah.
I mean, they did just announce the 4K release of the theatrical cut.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of a slap in the face to everybody that just watched the Snyder.
It may be that, but I also kind of wonder if it's just... that's when it was going to come out, and
it just happened to be poor timing.
Yeah, but you know, I don't know. That's just my personal opinion. But you know, yeah, it's just one of those things. It's a weird thing where, like, I both hate, like, why did you make this choice? And there's a lot of choices that didn't make. Like, I can understand. Okay, like, I've heard that the executives didn't think that Steppenwolf they thought he looked too scary, so they wanted to dumb him down. Okay, let's redesign him. That I get why they did it, but it doesn't make sense. But there's other things where, like, there's scenes where TVs are in the background, and one version the TV has one thing, and the other version the TV has another. The what's in the TV has no bearing on the scene at all. It's like putting, you know, a blue cup versus a red cup in the corner, you know, unless, you know, it's like the Sixth Sense where everything red is like something dead, you know, whatever, you know, it's a pointless thing. It's like, why the hell did you do that?
I wonder if, you know, obviously the theatrical cut has scenes and stuff that was shot by Zack Snyder. But then, you know, like the scene in question where there's TV screens in the background, were those images on those TVs a decision of Joss, is that Zach's like, get it out of there. I'm putting my own TVs. You know, I don't know. I don't know.
That may be. Yeah, I don't know. It's just one of those weird things. Like, why are these changes? That is a good point. You know, maybe it was Zach that made that change. But
well, I've never heard from either Joss or Zach, like in the world of Hollywood, the world of, you know, people that work in the movie business. Were they friends before Joss Whedon took over? Were they, or did they just kind of know who each other were?
Yeah.
But I'm curious, what was their relationship before and what is their relationship now? And then, not going into detail, obviously there's Joss Whedon he's been
in the news lately for not so good reasons.
And a lot of it related to his work on the Justice League.
Yes.
So again, there's a lot of stuff there that we're not really privy to what exactly went on other than what the actors have said. But again, I'm not going to go into that.
Yeah. I almost wonder if like, but like, I kind of got the impression, this was my, like, when I'm reading this stuff, this is what I'm thinking, that they're like, oh yeah, they're friends. They like working with each other and all that stuff. But that's just to save face and be like, you know, like when the movie's 80% done and the director steps away, it's like, it's kind of also like, there hasn't been much revealed about this at all either. But I remember reading some articles saying that the tragedy that made Zack Snyder need to step away, Warner Brothers took the opportunity, and once again, I'm not saying this is what happened, this is what I've read, that they took the opportunity to, like, okay, this is our chance to switch them out. This is our chance to cut ties. It's an awful reason, but they took the opportunity, and because they were not happy with.
So Wonder Woman had come out before the Justice League, correct?
I believe so.
Okay. Because we know that the success of the first Wonder Woman movie changed kind of the trajectory of DC's idea of what they were doing. And so that would make sense of, Wonder Woman had become a more successful movie than the other movies that had come before.
Yeah, the Man of Steel was kind of half 50-50, and then Batman versus Superman had even a bigger issue. Suicide Squad was, I think,
released the ire cut.
Yeah, the air cut. Suicide Squad was another kind of fiasco where, like, this, I remember walking out of the theater like, that was it. And so yeah, they were going downhill, unfortunately. And then Wonder Woman came out and blew everything out of the water. And so it was like, okay, this is a little more hopeful, it's a lighter.
Did they see the unfortunate circumstance of him having to step away as a, hey, we can now make Justice League more like Wonder Woman?
I think they were wanting to do that already, and they were making Zack Snyder make changes, because the version that's out isn't even the original version he had planned on making. So they were already in the process of doing that. But yeah, like I said, I can't say that that's what happened. Covering my butt, that's just what I've read.
Right.
That opportunity was seized at a unfortunate time.
What's interesting though to think though that when we kind of first started doing podcast on the DC universe, I know our podcast included we don't really know where this one is going. Where is this universe heading because of the ups and downs?
Yeah.
And since that podcast, there's been at least three movies, maybe more, but we're still in a situation where
we don't know where the DC
universe is up in the air as to like, what are we going to get? This is the trajectory of Zack Snyder, what he was going for. Are we going to get the Justice League version, or, you know, who knows? I and you know, we reviewed Wonder Woman 1984, which we both felt it was a step down.
Yeah.
But I think they are going to use the Flash movie as a let's just
wipe the slate clean.
Let's wipe the slate clean. Let's get Michael Keaton in here. Let's get, you know, obviously they're.
Yeah.
I think, I'm wondering if they're going to approach the Flash movie as a let's start over.
I'm surprised that they didn't try that sooner. You know, I know the Flash movie's been, well, maybe it's because it's been in production development for a while. Yeah, but I'm surprised they didn't try to push up the Flash. I mean, they've obviously made, you know, a second Wonder Woman and
Shazam.
They made Shazam, but that was probably already in the works and stuff like that. And so, yeah, I don't know. It definitely seems like an obvious thing. Like, if you don't like what's going on, here's how you fix it. But, you know, we'll see what happens with the Flash when it comes out. I think they've started production finally, which is a good sign. They announced
there's been set photo, I guess, that shows they're harkening back to the Wayne Manor from the Michael Keaton.
Okay. And I haven't seen those.
I haven't looked at it yet. Okay. I've just read.
But they released like an animated title sequence announcement, basically, like the Flash coming in 2022 or something like that.
Haven't they started production on Black Adam and or Shazam 2?
Yes. I don't know about Shazam. Both. No, I think that, they've done both. They've started on both. Dwayne The Rock Johnson announced, he showed like the first page of the script or something like that, and said that they're starting tomorrow.
That's what's hard to try to grasp about the DC universe is there's several movies in the works. How are they gonna tie them all together?
Well, I think what they're gonna do, this is my personal opinion, is I think they're going to, once again, the Flash is going to be a big proponent of this. But I think they're going to lash on to the multiverse aspect, and that there are different versions of these characters out there, and we may or may not continue those franchises and move on in that way. So that way, because, like, you know, they're going to introduce, obviously, the Michael Keaton Batman. They've already done that with the Flash TV show. Ezra Miller made a cameo appearance on their Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover, and it's a really cool, funny scene, and you realize in that he doesn't call himself the Flash. He doesn't even know what his name is yet, which is hilarious. I think that's what they're going to latch on to, saying that Joaquin Phoenix's Joker is in the same universe as all this stuff. It's just a different multiverse.
Same with Robert Pattinson's Batman.
It's all going to be connected through the multiverse.
Just not necessarily part of the main
storyline. What's your preferred version of Justice League? The theatrical version from 2017 or the newly released Zack Snyder's Justice League? Let us know.
Or are you like our sister, Amy, who would probably say, I'm not going to watch either one of those. Sorry, Amy, if you're listening.
I challenge you to watch it. Watch both versions in one day.
6 hours. Go.
Let us know on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and anchor.fm. Until next time, we'll see you at the movies.
And don't forget to check your ticket stub.